recovered. How are you?
Good morning, Scott. I'm well. How about you?
I'm impressed with your Johnny on the spot here. It's exactly 10 o'clock.
Well, good. Yeah, I tried to be. It's not a couple minutes early, but it just worked out perfect. So thank you very much.
Are you sore today from your little altercation?
No. I mean, it really wasn't bad, but it was enough to kind of rattle me. I'm not sore, and the car is not that bad. I mean, it's really just got a little scratch on it, or a couple scratches, but that's about it. So.
Yeah, it's just bothersome. I mean, it's going to be, you got to get a bid and go to the shop and be without your car for 2 days.
Exactly. It does throw a kink into things for a while, but that's life.
Yeah, it just is.
Yeah, I agree. So now we're scheduled to go for about 45 minutes, and when we're done with the interview, I go in and edit the audio, and then I upload it to various platforms like Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and a few others. And then when I'm done with that, I'll get the individualized links, and I'll send you an email with those links.
Well, that's pretty easy.
Okay. Now, do I have your email, or should I send it to Sarah?
Oh, send it to me.
Okay.
It'll just make life easier for her. And
okay.
Mm-hmm. Do you have that email?
I'm not sure. It might be at the bottom of your the information that she sent.
Why don't I give it to you now?
That'll be great.
You ready?
Yes, I am.
Scott, Scott.
Uh-huh.
Dot Taylor, Taylor,
right,
at expandaware.com.
Okay, that would be Scott.Taylor at expand. Was it just expandaware or expand.aware?
Nope. No dot.
Okay, expandaware.com.
Yep.
Okay. All right, that's great. Yep, I will send it then directly to you once it's up.
It will just make life a whole lot easier.
Yeah. I love Sarah. I have been working with her for more than 10 years, so.
Well, I'm glad to hear it.
Yeah, she's definitely one of the most professional publicists that I work with, and I have about a half a dozen that I work with regularly. So,
yeah, okay. And she's doing the publicity for this conference that I'm speaking at.
Oh, okay.
In September, and I made a suggestion that it would be a good idea to have me on some podcasts so that I could, people right. know me. I'm one of the keynotes. So that way, at the end, I'll do a little advertisement for it, if you don't mind.
Oh, no. As a matter of fact, I already have it set for that. So,
okay.
I mean, I've got the exact dates, the location, and their web address too. So,
sweet deal. Then I don't have to do it.
There you go.
And you can find Dr. Scott Taylor at blah, blah, blah.
Exactly. That'd be perfect. Okay. So, any questions on your part?
Yes.
Okay.
How involved do you like to be as the host?
I prefer to have the guest do most of the talking, because I think, that's what people tune in to hear. So, and by involved, is that what you meant? Is more talking or another way?
No, that's as long as I know.
Okay.
Some hosts have, you know, they really want to be part of the interview.
Yeah.
That means that my answers have to be short and snippy, and and that's fine. I don't mind. It's just as long as I know, you know, ours is more like a conversation, that's great.
Exactly. That is exactly it. More of a conversation. And like I say, you know, I prefer the guests to do most of the talking, because I think, again, that's what people tune in to hear. Excuse me.
And your audience, what are they interested in?
Very much the metaphysical. I started off 14 years ago with really having a lot of intuitive people on the show. Actually, my partner, who just passed away last year, was a really good clairvoyant. And, and so, you know, that's kind of where we started. And then I would have others on. And then, you know, probably about 5 years into it, I went into a lot more of the self-development, and the more inspirational kinds of stories.
Got it. So you have my materials, right?
Your material, excuse me, what do you mean your materials?
Like my background, my bio, my picture, all that jazz.
I didn't really have the bio. Now I do have just, a short introduction.
That'll work.
Okay, yeah. And then, excuse me, and I did, of course, get all of the suggested talking points and / questions that Sarah provided. And that's, you know, those are really good. But also feel free to tell stories. You know, I'm going to want to start, of course, talking about your shared death experience. But then, again, feel free to tell stories, go on tangents. I'm very loose when it comes to that, and it can always bring us back, you know, back on track if need be.
Nope. Great. Awesome.
Okay. So any other questions from you?
You said this was recorded, so if I don't like an answer, we can redo it?
Yes. Yes. As a matter of fact, if there is an answer that you don't like, just let me know. And then as I'm going through and doing the edits, I can always edit it out.
And we're going straight through, no breaks?
That's correct.
Then I'm good to go.
Okay, great. All right, so let me go ahead and do the introduction. Good day, everyone. Welcome to the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. To find out more about our upcoming shows or access to our more than 1,800 podcast episodes, visit our website at www.biteradio.me. Today, my special guest is Dr. Scott Taylor. He is president of the Expanded Awareness Institute. AEI helps people interested in near-death and shared death experiences explore what that experience means to them and to our culture as a whole. Scott's gift is the ability to make the exploration of the non-physical universe accessible to the curious. Also, Scott is author and voice of 6 best-selling CDs of guided meditations on near-death experiences in his Into the Light series. He is a spiritual teacher, speaker, and researcher on near-death and shared death experiences. For more information, you can visit his website, neardeathmeditations.com. And also, Scott will be a presenter at the San Diego Transcendence Retreat in September, and we will give you more information about that retreat at the end of the show. And with that, I'd like to welcome Scott to the show. Good day, Scott.
Hey, Robert, I have been looking forward to our conversation. Yahoo, we're here.
Thank you. I love your enthusiasm. Now, I guess we should probably start with, as I mentioned in the introduction, that you are experienced in talking about and sharing near-death experience and shared death experience. Many people may not have heard about shared death experience. So can you tell us a little bit about each and how they differ?
Oh, sure. So let's start with the easy one. That would be near-death experiences. It's been around for about 50 years since Raymond Moody first wrote his book in 1975, Life After Life. And in a simple form, near-death experiences happen when the body has some sort of physical trauma, so much so that it dies, and that our soul, our non-physical body, leaves the physical body, goes up into the non-physical universe, has some sort of an adventure, and then the EMTs, those miracle workers here on the planet, reanimate the body again, and the soul comes back in, and eventually they're able to remember and tell their experience. So that's a near-death experience. Shared death experiences are really similar, except that there's no physical trauma to the body. And so, you know, a good example would be a person who's sitting bedside at somebody who's making their transition. And when the person who's making their final transition leaves their physical body for the last time, they invite the person sitting next to them to join them. And so then the two of them leave and go and have an experience in the non-physical universe. That person who is the observer can do that, can be an observer, or they can also be invited to actually share. It's like the two souls merge, and you're able to experience what the person who's making their final transition is experiencing. And at some point, it's finished. And the one who's still connected with the physical universe comes back to their physical body, and the other moves on and moves further into the light. The kinds of adventures that they have are almost identical between near-death and shared-death experience, with one major exception, and that is sometimes in a near-death experience, there is an opportunity for the guides to have a 2x4 moment with the person, which essentially means they have a conversation like, "Hey, you came down here with a mission. You are so far off of that mission that we have arranged this little come to Jesus meeting here. And we want to be sure that you are choosing which path that you want to go on. Do you want to go on this wayward path, or you want to go on the path that you signed up for? Because you're messing everything up by not being on the path that you had intended. So what is it?" You know, a conversation, something like that. It's usually, not as delicate as I just put it. Some people would call that a less than positive experience. That's what it's known as in the literature, an LTP, or just simply a hellish experience, because it can take many forms. And so it's highly disturbing, and it's designed to shock the person into a true decision with everything known. So you're making a fully informed decision about whether or not you want to stay in your path or go off on a different path. That does not happen with a shared death experience. The people who accompany those who are making their final transition have witnessed no hellish experiences ever. Our study is 900 people, and every single one of those 900 people go to a benevolent afterlife. So there is no such thing as this going into a hellscape after you leave your physical body. That only exists in the near-death realm, where the whole process is designed to give you an experience and bring you back to the physical world. That's not true, of course, when we make our physical transition, the last one. And it, I think, is really comforting to know that every single one of us goes to a benevolent afterlife.
Yeah, that is very comforting for sure. Now, I understand that you yourself had a shared death experience. Can you share it with the listeners, please?
I would love to. And as I talk, you'll see many of those components that I just mentioned. So it happened in, had a little burp there. It happened in 1981. I was in love with a woman. Her name was Mary Frances. And Mary Frances and her son Nolan, who had just turned 7, had been out sailing on beautiful Lake Washington in southern Minnesota. On their way home from sailing, they were involved in this horrific car accident. Mary Fran was killed outright, and Nolan sustained a mortal head injury that he would not survive. It took him 6 days to make his transition. That becomes important because Mary Fran was one of 9 kids, and so all these people had a chance to come to the Mayo Health System in Rochester and hold vigil for Nolan. And, you know, brothers and sisters and boyfriends and girlfriends and aunts and uncles and neighbors and grandparents, and that's just her side of the family. So, you know, my family was there too, and it was a lot of people in a small waiting room. And Nolan was placed in a small-ish hospital room, lots of monitors, and we quickly saw that to hold vigil with Nolan, you couldn't do it with that crowd, so we all drew straws. And my shift was a 2-hour shift from 3 in the morning until 5 in the morning, on the morning of the 6th day. And when it was our shift, the two of us would go in. My partner was Jannie, Mary Fran's eldest sister. And we had been told by the nurse on the floor, wonderful woman, who she said, well, Nolan is in a coma, and in fact, he would never come out of the coma. Mm-hmm. But people in comas, the last sense to go is the sense of hearing. So she said, even though he can't respond to you, very likely he can hear you. So it's important that you talk to him like he's present in the room and that you engage him in storytelling and conversation as much as you can. So Jannie and I started our shift, and we brought along Nolan's favorite book, and we read him that story. We told him about what his uncles had done at midnight. They had gone throughout the Mayo Health System and stolen all the cushions off of the couch.
Oh, no.
And came back to the waiting room and placed them on the floor so that, you know, all these people would have a place to sit or lie down while, you know, they're waiting. So that was funny. And, you know, we just told them about who was there and what they were doing. And at about 4:45 in the morning, Jenny looks at me and goes down to the end of the bed and picks up his chart. She was a trained emergency room nurse. And she looked at his chart, looked at all the monitors, and she held out her hand to me and said, "Scott, I think it's time for you and I to say goodbye." So we sat at his head. We told him how proud we were of him because he, for 6 days, had really fought to stay with us in the physical world. But then Janie told him that if his mother should come, remembering that Mary Fran had been killed 6 days earlier, she said if Mary Fran would come and ask him to go with her, that would be the right thing to do, that he should go with his mother. And we told him that we loved him dearly and that he would always be a part of our family and part of our lives and be in our thoughts and prayers all the time. It's now 5:00 and we leave and the next shift comes in. Well, about 45 minutes later, the nurse on the floor comes in and flips on the light in the waiting room and says that Nolan's vital signs were decreasing rapidly and now would be the time to be with him. So this whole crowd just files into his room. And at that point, as it turns out, I was one of the very last people in line. So when I got to the room, it was already 4 deep around the bed. And I said, "Well, that's just silly." So I went over and I sat on the windowsill next to Mary Fran's youngest brother, Willie, and you wait. And, you know, really all there is to do while you're sitting there on the windowsill is to watch the heart monitor, and it mm-hmm. wound up going slower and slower and slower. And eventually it flatlines. And when Nolan flatlined, what I experienced was Mary Fran coming across the veil and scooping Nolan up out of his physical body. And the two of them had this exquisite reunion, as you could only imagine that happens between a mother and child. And Robert, it surprised me because I was able to feel what they were feeling. Well, then what surprised me even more was that Mary Fran and Nolan then turned, came over to me, embraced me, and then the three of us left and went to the light. And entering into the light is everything that you've ever heard or read about. It's joy, it's love, it's compassion, it's unity, it is unrequited love. It's an extraordinary place to be. I felt connected with them and the universe, and it just is so wonderful that it's really beyond anything English words can say. But none of it really made any difference, because there I was in the light with Mary Fran and Nolan, and we were able to affirm our love and affection for each other. We had a chance to say a proper goodbye, because I was at work nowhere near the scene of the accident. And then we had a chance just to be together and just kind of, well, I guess it's like we hung out. in this space. And even though all of this stuff was going on about this joy and ecstasy, you know, my entire focus was on them and being able to be with them for the last time. And then at some point, it just felt complete. Like, we have done what we needed to do. And they turned and went further into the light. And I came back to my physical body sitting there on the windowsill next to Willie. So, Robert, that's part one of three. Maybe I'll pause here for just a second and see if you get any questions.
Well, yeah. First of all, how long of a period was this experience for you? I mean, both in real time and then in your perceived time.
So that's a really good question, because I'm guessing that maybe it was 4 or 5, maybe as long as 10 minutes in Earth time.
Okay.
You know, not terribly long, but I would say it was hours.
Okay.
In the other time, it was, yeah, we had plenty of time to be together in the light.
Okay, because, you know, it's often said that, you know, that side of the veil, you know, time doesn't really exist in essence. And so, you know, it seems that one could experience, like you did, an extended experience, yet, you know, back here in Earth time, that it may not have been that long at all.
Yep. That's exactly what happened.
Okay, and one of the things, now, there were a lot of people there in the room with you, so why do you think, first of all, did anyone else have any kind of similar type of experience? And if not, why do you think that you were gifted, really, that experience?
Well... Nicely done, Robert. That is part C of my story.
Okay. Okay.
But I'll answer the other question first. Why me?
Mm-hmm.
We actually know there's an answer to that question. The research on shared death experiences points very directly to three things being critical. First off is that you have a heart connection with the person making their transition. And I certainly had that with Mary Fran. And Nolan had never known his biological father. He had disappeared, just ghosted them once he found out that Mary Fran was pregnant. So she never told him. And Nolan wanted a father in his life. And so when I came into their lives, I was starting to take on that role with him, and we were, you know, forming a bond. And so he was really wanting that to happen, and it worked for me too. So the both of us had this had mm-hmm. heart connection with both Mary Fran and Nolan. Second thing is that you need to be available. I mean, you can't be driving a car, digging the ditch. You can't be actively grieving. You need to be in an open, receptive state. And I was, you know, just sitting there on the windowsill watching the monitor, the heart monitor, and, you know, not much going on there. And the third, and probably the most important, out of those three is that the person or persons making their final transition, in this case that would be Nolan and Mary Fran, because she was there too, but they need to invite you to come with them. And it's all about matching vibrations. we know that when people leave their physical body, we change our vibratory rate. It increases to enter into this other dimension that's life between lives. And it's easier for them to reach back down and embrace me. That was the key word. Because when they embrace me, what happens is that my energetic body matches theirs in vibration. It, their energy raised up my energy, so it's at the same frequency. And then it's just so easy to go into the light with that happening. It's extremely difficult to do it the other way around. You know, you're sitting bedside and you're going, oh, there goes Nolan. I think I'll put myself into a higher vibrational state and go with him. Well, which one? you know, I grew up in, I was 27 years old, and I grew up in southern Minnesota in a traditional Presbyterian church. They don't talk about this stuff. I didn't even know it, this could even exist. And so there was no way that I could participate in Nolan's transition, because I didn't even think that was the solution set, you know. So those three things, an heart connection, the ability you're open and available, and that there's an invitation from the person making their final transition, and that invitation takes the form of raising your vibratory level so that you can go with them.
Okay. Yeah, I find that really interesting. My partner of 37 years passed away last year, and I was bedside with him when he made that transition. And, you know, of course, we had that heart connection, and I was certainly available there, but didn't get an invite. And what was interesting is during that time, and you know, I just was flashing back as you were giving the description of Nolan and the heart monitor and all that kind of thing, because it was, you know, just so fresh in my mind, I was acutely aware of his paternal grandmother, who is his love and heart of his life, there, you know, to help him make that transition. And my thought on that particular one is that he was just so happy, you know, to be with her again, that, you know, he really didn't have a concern about me and, you know, what was going to happen and all that kind of thing. So, and quite honestly, I don't know if, even if the invite happened, if I would have been, aware enough, you know, to have that increased vibration to, you know, to share in that experience. So, I was really curious as to what the conditions were for such an experience. And, I don't feel bad, you know, that invite didn't happen, or the whole shared experience didn't happen. And in probability, it might have scared me more than the actual light feeling. And in essence, you know, that might have been why the invite didn't happen, is because it was, you know, really not necessary for me to share that experience.
Yep. Well, there's another thing, which is, the research also shows that that shared death experience doesn't have to happen at the moment of the transition in the physical world. Remember, we were talking about time?
Right.
There are those that have done the shared thing before the actual moment of physical death, at the scene, and after. And being bedside, not required. Only about 40% of shared death experiences happen bedside.
Wow.
60% happen long distance. So and many of them happen in hypnagogic states, you know, that precious state between wake and sleep, either going mm-hmm. into or coming out of sleep, because you're in a higher vibratory state then, and it's easier for those on the other side to contact you. And certainly that can still happen. It might not be the actual transition experience, but, you know, I would encourage your listeners to put an intent out there to say, you know, Grandma Gertie, you know, come visit me and, you know, show me what you're doing there and up in heaven. And as you go to sleep at night, that is a wonderful thing to just set an intent and see what happens. You know, sometimes yeah. they'll show up and that's a wonderful thing.
Yeah, good. Now, you mentioned that, you know, with your Presbyterian background, that, you know, the near-death and shared-death experiences weren't really on the educational agenda. So can you tell us a little bit about, you know, what your knowledge and experience before and after that experience, how things shifted for you?
Oh, yeah. So, you know, I grew up in small town Minnesota, and you have to say it like that. And, you know, I was working for a department store at the time. I was, you know, leading a very conventional life for a person who was starting their career and, you know, just wanting to learn how to live and be part of society. Afterwards, I came out of that experience with this intense curiosity. And in particular, I knew that if I had been in the light with Mary Fran and Nolan, if I'd done it once, I could do it again. I just had to figure out how.
Mm-hmm.
And so I said, well, how do I do that? And having no background whatsoever, I said, well, tell you what, there's these ancient sacred sites around the world. Why don't I go visit them and see if there's any stored juju there that will help propel me into the light. And so I went to visit Stonehenge and the Sphinx and the Great Pyramids and Machu Picchu and the Oracle of Delphi and. I went to more cathedrals than you could shake a stick at. And essentially what happened was I had a whole series of wonderful vacations. It didn't really take me where I wanted to go.
Mm-hmm.
And then I said, well, how about if I try something a little more experiential? So I tried TM meditation. I studied with shamans in both North and South America. And that kind of got me partly there, but not really. And then I said, well, maybe I'm not understanding this process. So I went to seminary and I graduated from seminary. And what happened there was I got words. I got words for what had happened to me, because the experience in itself is absolutely ineffable. I mean, it is so hard to describe. I mean, I've had a lot of years to wrap words around it.
Mm-hmm.
So the seminary gave me words for what this possibility could look like. And then I ran into the Monroe Institute.
Mm-hmm.
And so the Monroe Institute, for you listeners who don't know, was founded by Bob Monroe. He was the first person to write about out-of-body experiences in the Western world. And He wrote a book about it called Journeys Out of the Body. And when I read it, I went, oh, I want me some of that. This might be the key. So I went down to the Monroe Institute, took their first class, which is called Gateway. And in that Gateway class, I reconnected with Mary Fran. And so I said, oh, this is great. I'm going to go back for a second class. And the second class I took was called Guidelines. And in that, I reconnected with Nolan and a bunch of my other dead relatives and was able to establish a relationship with them that exists to this day. So it was the Monroe's particular form of meditation enhanced with binaural beat technology, which is you wear headphones and it helps raise your vibratory level just by using these really soft, lovely sounds. And then I could teach myself how to raise my vibratory level to any rate I wanted, and then able to explore the non-physical world at will. So, and then just to top it all off, I went to the University of St. Thomas in Minnesota. It's Minnesota's largest private university. And there I did my doctoral work in educational leadership, and I wrote my dissertation on persons that had near-death experiences. And that's how I found that there was an academic base for all that I was studying and interested in, and it really solidified how I would look at the world from then on.
Yeah, I have had multiple guests over the years who have gone to the Monroe Institute, and their stories have been fascinating, you know, and the ability to experience the afterlife, and also it changed everyone I've spoken with, changed their paradigm as far as, you know, what this world and that world is all about.
Yep. And I was so taken by what they did that I became a trainer for them 35 years. And then when their executive director resigned, she asked me to come and do that job. And so I was executive director for Monroe for a little over 2 years. And get this, during the pandemic, when we could not have any kind of residential retreats, which was our bread and butter. And so it was terrifically stressful time. So we, you know, wound up raising a bunch of money so that we could make it through and change their offerings to put them online. And we did a bunch of really cool stuff. But I have to tell you, I measure my time there in dog years, because even though I was there physically for 2 years, it felt like 14.
Yeah. I bet. So now, what would you say for those listening who may be skeptical about the idea of near death and shared death experiences, you know, that they think that maybe it's just a chemical reaction of the brain at the time of death? Can you maybe, what would you say to those who are skeptical?
Well, thank you for that question. The University of Virginia, you know, one of the top leading universities in the country, has been studying near-death experiences for 50 years. And they have it's extensively studied. And a summary of all of that research is in a book by the chair of that department, Dr. Bruce Grayson. It's called Awake. And just a quick read of that book will set you back on your heels, because it is so well documented. And in particular, Bruce's expertise was in, you know, somebody comes up with a theory that says hypoxia, you know, the lack of oxygen in the brain, that's the reason. And so every one mm-hmm. of the theories that are, no, questions that came up, he'd do a study. And then he would come back and he'd say, nope, it's not oxygen deprivation to the brain, and here's the reasons why. And all of that is in that book. It's just wonderful. For, if you're interested in shared death experiences, there is that 900 patient study I was telling you about.
Mm-hmm.
It's written up in a book called At Heaven's Door. It's by William Peters, and it's a fascinating read. Tons of wonderful stories. And the true breakthrough that happened was a study in the Netherlands in a book called Consciousness Beyond Life by Dr. Pim van Lommel. And he's the one who really nailed down that consciousness is not a product of the brain, and it doesn't reside within the brain, and it exists after physical death. And this was a study that came out in 2001 in Nature. That's Britain's most prestigious medical journal. And from that point on, people started to look at consciousness differently. And those three books are just wonderful for people who are really craving to know kind of the scientific background about how this all works. And if you're interested in just a big overview of all of the types of things you find with near-death and shared-death experiences, researcher P.M.H. Atwater wrote, cleverly named, The Big Book of Near-Death Experiences. And mm-hmm. that is, it's a fabulous read, and it's a big book because there's lots to study, and she does a wonderful job. And she does it differently than the other people. They're, you know, scientific, statistically based. PMH does it from a qualitative standpoint, where she listens to stories and then develops better statistics from that perspective. So I highly recommend all four of those books. Go for it.
Yeah. Actually, years ago, I had PMH Atwater on one of my shows, and she was just a fascinating woman.
Absolutely. And she still is. She's in her mid-80s now, still writing, still challenging the norms that people have out there. And, you know, it's like, you go, girl.
Exactly. Now, we're winding down here, Scott, toward the end. Now, I mentioned in the introduction that you have a 6 best-selling CDs, Guided Meditations, called Into the Light series. So can you share with the listeners what those meditations cover?
Sure. Some time ago, it occurred to me that this energetic pathway that we have established from with near-death experiences, if you are in meditation and you place yourself in that pathway, you can visit the same places that near-death experiencers also visit, but without the physical trauma, which I highly recommend. Do not do the beat up the body thing. So these 6 albums are designed to take you to different parts of the near-death experience, like say you want to explore the tunnel, or you would like to have a reunion with the dead relatives, or you would like to have a life review, or you want to go to that place that is the source of all being. All of that is available to you using meditation that uses binaural beat technology to help raise your vibratory level, so you can easily go there and learn how to do it, and then you can check the CDs because you don't need them after you've kind of learned how to do it by yourself. They're all described and available on my website, neardeathmeditations.com, and they're great. I also have 6 courses that I've taught on the Shift Network that are archived, and you can take them anytime you want. And of course, the last thing I'd say is, you know, Robert, you mentioned it at the beginning, I'm going to be speaking at the Transcendence Retreat in San Diego in September. Come see me live, and we can have a talk.
Yeah, that'd be great. Now, I want to give a little bit more information about that. That retreat is going to be September 19th and 20th at the Catamaran Resort on Mission Bay, San Diego. I used to live in San Diego, and that is such a beautiful area. I mean, it's transcendent in itself. You're going to be talking about, you know, your shared death experiences and go into more detail. Also, if people want to learn about the retreat and sign up for it, they can go to sandiegotranscendenceretreat.com. And your presentation is entitled Lessons from Light, What We Can Learn from Near-Death Experiences.
Absolutely. It's going to be fun. There's a wonderful lineup of speakers. Come visit.
Yeah, it looks great. Well, Scott, thank you very much for your time today. I really enjoyed speaking with you, and look forward to following you and keeping in touch.
Thank you, Robert. I think we had a blast today.
Great. I agree. Again, everyone, today my special guest has been Scott Taylor, and we've been talking about near-death experiences and shared death experiences. And again, as he said, you can find out more about what he has to offer, his guided meditation CDs, as well as workshops, by visiting his website, which is neardeathmeditations.com. And again, one more time, for the San Diego Transcendence Retreat on September 19th and 20th at Catamaran Resort in Mission Bay. Again, sandiegotranscendenceretreat.com. And everyone, in closing, I want to thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth Show. And remember to be a bright light by bringing inspiration to your world and to the lives of those you touch. Okay, Scott. That's a wrap.
Yay. I think you did a good job.
I agree completely, and it was really wonderful and interesting, and I know that the listeners are going to enjoy it.
I can't wait to find out how they take to it. And I guess you've done 1,600 podcasts.
Over 14 years. Yeah, I mean, there was 1 year I challenged myself to have 5 interviews per week. And I did for a full year, but it was I found I wasn't able to give attention, you know, because a lot of times I will go in and, you know, do as much preparation as I can. And if it involves a book, I like to do the reading of the book or at least a detailed review of it. And so, you know, I met that challenge, but recognized that, you know, it wasn't the high level of quality I preferred. So I kind of cut back to a few times per week. But yeah, I've spoken to a lot of people.
Yes, you have.
Yeah.
Although it's a different thing, when I turned 60, it was traumatic for me. I don't know why, it just was. And so what I decided to do was to mark that year by wearing a kilt every day for a year.
Wow.
So it's not similar to what you did, but on the same idea, it is similar that, you know, you set yourself a goal and you go, I'm going to do this. And I did. It was a blast. I learned so much about our human species as a result.
I am sure. I have no doubt about that. Yeah. Well, I turned the big 70 this year. So, but I didn't set out a new challenge. But being single after 37 years it's challenging itself.
Yeah, I'm sorry about losing your partner.
That's
a tough one. It's been a long time too. 35 years.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. So it is. It was a lifetime or two. It was really a wonderful experience, you know. And but like I say, I mean, that's just, you know, the life cycle that we have. And he was quite ready to go. And actually, even when we met in my 30s, he told me that he didn't see him living beyond 70. And
he
passed.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it was really a deeply held belief, and I truly believe that, you know, it was willed into existence. So.
Oh well.
Yeah.
I keep telling my wife I'm going to live to be 140. So.
Oh boy. Well, now is she going to meet you there too?
I guess.
Oh, good. Well, that's great. Well, again, Scott, I really enjoyed our conversation. And now you're on social media?
I am.
Okay.
I have a very active YouTube channel. And, you know, and then I'm on Spotify and, you know, all of the, so it's a video podcast
that I do.
And so that's mainly where I show up.
Okay.
And, I just love this work. Like you said, it's just amazing the amount of people that you meet and their stories, and they have so much to teach me about the nature of the universe. It's just
wonderful.
My latest thing is the evolution of the human species. What are we going to do with this new energy that's coming in? And how do we take advantage of that and not resist it, but
embrace it?
Lead to this new unfolding of what humanity is capable of.
Yeah.
And
that's a very timely topic.
We're living through the destruction of the old structures, and that is a tough one all in itself to watch it all go away. But
yeah,
to rebuild it.
Yeah, I agree, and you know, and it's really kind of having to the structures have to be broken down to the very foundation in order, you know, for us to rebuild something new and incorporate that new energy.
Speaking of which, we saw Disclosure Day yesterday. Spielberg's new film about when aliens make themselves known.
Right.
It's fabulous. Really, really good. There's a couple Hollywood moments that kind of like, really, guys?
Uh-huh.
But, you know, that's only half of 1% of the film. The rest of the film is deeply researched and highly believable, and it's from, you know, the eyes of normal people. It's wonderful. I put it on your bucket list. You got to watch the thing.
Yeah, I'm going to have to. I actually had a gentleman on maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago who had seen it, and his big thing is ETs, you know, and his review was very much like yours, you know, that there was a lot of really good information in there, you know, you mentioned Hollywood moment, and you know, he mentioned that, you know, there are a few things that were kind of like, you know, why do you have to do that? Why do you have to go and ruin it? But, you know, I think, you know, the whole idea of presenting the topic and capturing people's attention is really what's most important.
Yep. And it provides, we went to a restaurant afterwards, and I don't know, an hour and a half, we talked about the little things that were in the movie that showed that they had researched it, and just how they were honest with how people would react to this. It was good. It was, and I was surprised at how emotional it was. I mean, I've been in this world for 45 years, right?
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of it, you know, I just had like tears streaming down my eyes. Going,
wow.
This is a breakthrough moment for humanity.
Wow.
And I was just so glad that he did it.
Yeah.
In a way that was sensitive and believable, honestly.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's great. Yeah, yeah. And one more thing that was kind of, as we were talking about the, you know, that moment of transition, just earlier this week, I had a podcast with a father-daughter co-authors. He was a firefighter, paramedic, and she is EMT. And the book is called The Saved Effect, The True Stories of Lives Reclaimed by People Who Are Willing to Act. So, I mean, they take some real life stories of, you know, people who were saved, you know, at usually through, you know, doing CPR, and the people who they've come into contact with and actually followed them and found out how much their saved life influenced not only them, but everyone around them, you know, family, friends, community. So it was a really interesting book.
I believe it. Because, I mean, my whole life was just turned upside down as a result of this experience that I had. And, you know, I've trained thousands of people in the Monroe Technique and equally as many with my own technique, with the near-death experiences, and, you know, and all the people who watch the podcast, and, you know, if I just touch one, it makes a difference.
Right, right, yeah, and you don't do just one, you do hundreds and thousands, you know, and then when you ripple it outward, I mean, it's just breathtaking sometimes to recognize the impact that one individual can make.
Yeah, isn't that cool?
Yeah, I agree. Well,
okay.
Scott,
so
thank
official.
You.
You and I are both cool.
There you go. I have to agree with you. Listen, sir, you have a really good day and a happy and safe Fourth, and I will get to you with the links once they're up and available.
Thank you, sir. Have a good Fourth yourself. Enjoy it. Know that it's the beginning of something wonderful.
Yep. Thank you very much. Have a good day.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye now.